Imagine looking at a country's education data, right? And you decide to look at the poorest, least educated families. You want to measure how much inequality exists between the siblings in those specific homes.
Right, you're trying to see how much their outcomes vary.
Exactly. And the score you get is surprisingly low. They're all pretty similar. So then you look at the middle class families, also low.
Makes sense so far.
Right. And you check the absolute wealthiest, highly educated families, still low. Every single group you measure has a low level of sibling inequality.
Okay, so a fairly equal society across the board, it sounds like.
Well, that's the thing. You zoom out and look at the country as a whole, and the inequality score is absolutely massive.
Wait, really?
Yeah. So the question is, how can every single slice of a pie be like smaller than the whole pie?
I mean, that sounds like a riddle, or honestly, just a mistake in the data. Because we naturally assume that if you understand the parts, you understand the whole.
Right, the basic math we all learned.
Exactly. But human society doesn't always sum up neatly. Sometimes the very act of dividing people into groups, it hides the most massive structural forces at play.
And that statistical mystery is exactly where we are starting today. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are looking at a brand new academic paper from April 2026.
And it's a pretty heavy one.
Yeah, I am going to warn you, the listener, the title sounds like something you'd find on a graduate school syllabus. It is called A Harmonic Mean Decomposition of Sibling Correlations, Evidence from Turkey.
I will admit, harmonic mean decomposition isn't exactly a phrase that promises a thrilling story.
No, it's definitely not a beach read, but I promise you that beneath the, dense algebraic formulas, this paper is fundamentally about family secrets, hidden societal rules, and fairness.
It really is.
We are going to figure out how these researchers completely flipped the math on how we calculate inequality. And in the process, they decoded what the similarities between you and your siblings actually say about your destiny.
And they exposed this massive, just completely invisible wall dividing brothers and sisters.
Which is fascinating. But to get to that invisible wall, we first have to understand the core measurement these economists are obsessing over, right?
Yeah, we have to talk about the sibling correlation.
Right. Because historically, when researchers want to study how advantage or disadvantage is passed down, they measure parent-to-child transmission.
Yes. So they'll look at, say, a father's income and check how much of it dictates the son's income.
Which economists call intergenerational elasticity.
Right, elasticity. But the authors of this paper argue that looking only at the parents is just, well, a completely inadequate way to measure opportunity.
I was actually trying to visualize this while reading the paper, and I keep coming back to a baking analogy.
Okay, lay it on me.
So if you only look at parent-to-child transmission, it's like you are trying to figure out why a cake turned out a certain way by only analyzing the brand of flour the parents bought.
I mean, the flour is important.
It's super important, but it completely ignores the entire baking process.
Right. Sibling correlation, on the other hand, measures the entire kitchen environment.
Exactly. It is not just the flour. It is the oven temperature, the humidity in the room, the local grocery store where the ingredients came from, and even like the recipes passed around by the neighbors.
That's a great way to put it, because sibling correlations measure the share of total variation in an outcome like years of education, for example, that is attributable to all the factors that siblings raised in the same family share.
So it's everything they have in common.
Exactly. Siblings share a neighborhood, they share the quality of the local public schools, they are exposed to the same community norms, the same peer networks, and obviously they share genetic influences.
So it's a much wider net.
It is. The sibling correlation is really the ultimate all-encompassing test of equality of opportunity. If the sibling correlation in a country is very high, it basically tells you that a child's starting line largely dictates their finish line.
So to put this to the test, the researchers utilized this massive data set. It's called the Turkish Demographic and Health Survey.
Yes, the DHS data.
And they looked at co-resident siblings, age 16 to 28, covering this huge 25-year span from 1993 all the way to 2018. But I guess the obvious question is, why use Turkey as the laboratory for this?
Well, Turkey offers a really unique environment for studying social mobility. It is a rapidly modernizing middle-income economy.
Right.
It has experienced massive economic growth, but it still grapples with deeply persistent inequalities along lines of gender, geography, and parental background.
So it's very much in flux.
Exactly, because in a fully developed, highly egalitarian society, the subtle forces of inequality can actually be kind of hard to spot. But in Turkey, society is in active transition, so the dynamics are much more visible.
Okay, so let's look at the baseline result they found. The overall educational sibling correlation in Turkey is 0.52.
Right, 0.52.
Meaning 52% of the variation in how much education someone gets is tied directly to the family and environment they were born into.
And just to give you some global context for that number, 0.52 is higher than what we see in the Nordic countries.
Which makes sense, given their safety nets.
Yeah, places like Denmark, Norway, and Sweden typically hover in the 0.40s, which reflects their high mobility. But 0.52 is actually lower than the estimates for the United States and Germany.
Wait, really? The U.S. is higher than 0.52?
Yes. In the U.S. and Germany, family background dictates an even larger share of a child's educational destiny than it does in Turkey.
Wow, okay. That's a whole other deep dive right there.
Yeah.
But the Turkish data doesn't just sit static at 0.52, right?
No, not at all.
When they broke it down by historical cohorts, a really fascinating story emerged. So for siblings born in the 1970s, the correlation was 0.54.
Right.
In the 1980s cohort, it crept up a bit to 0.57. But then for the siblings born in the 1990s, that number completely plummeted down to 0.43.
Which is huge. A plunge from 0.57 to 0.43 in a single generation represents a massive seismic shift in shared familial destiny.
Because suddenly, siblings' outcomes were much less tethered to each other.
Exactly. And the researchers point out that this drop aligns perfectly with a major education reform Turkey passed in 1997.
Oh, interesting. What did the reform do?
The government extended compulsory schooling from 5 years to 8 years.
Ah, okay. So think about what that practically means for a family, especially a struggling one. If the state suddenly mandates that every child must stay in school for 3 additional years, the state is actively taking decision-making power out of the kitchen, so to speak.
That's exactly it. Parents who might have pulled their kids out of school to work or maybe help at home, they just no longer have that option. The government sets a higher mandatory floor for everyone.
Which means by forcing kids out of the kitchen and into the public square for 3 more years, the idiosyncratic individual differences between the siblings start to matter a lot more than their shared background.
Right. But we have to remember, even with that big drop for the younger cohort, a baseline correlation of 0.52 for the entire sample tells us that family background is still the dominant force in Turkish society.
Which begs the fundamental question of this whole deep dive, right? If the baseline is 0.52, how do we locate the actual source of that inequality?
Yes, who is pulling that average up and who is dragging it down?
And this is where the researchers, Öztunalı and Orhan Turul, essentially just throw out the traditional economic playbook entirely.
They really do, because historically, researchers used a mathematical method called additive variance decompositions.
Sounds complicated.
But it basically just treated sibling correlation like a basic accounting ledger. You take the differences within a group, add the differences between the groups, and boom, you get your total.
Simple addition. But these authors prove that using a simple average or additive math is fundamentally flawed here, because a sibling correlation is a ratio.
Right.
And breaking a ratio down into subgroups requires calculating a weighted harmonic mean, not just a normal average.
And a harmonic mean is typically used when you're dealing with rates or ratios, like calculating average speed over a journey with a bunch of different segments.
So by applying this specific math to sibling correlations, the researchers completely change what the data reveals. It exposes the statistical illusion I mentioned at the very beginning of the show.
The Simpsons paradox.
Yes. Let's finally solve the riddle we opened with.
Okay.
So the researchers divided the entire Turkish population into subgroups based on how much education the father had.
Oh.
And every single subgroup yielded a sibling correlation that was lower than the national average of 0.52.
Right. So in families where the father only had primary education, the correlation was 0.45. Fathers with absolutely no education, 0.37. Fathers with secondary education, 0.38.
I honestly had to look up an old baseball analogy to make sense of this paradox for myself.
Oh, I love a good baseball analogy. Let's hear it.
Okay, so imagine a baseball player. In the first half of the season, he hits better against left-handed pitchers than right-handed pitchers.
Okay, got it.
In the second half of the season, he also hits better against left-handed pitchers.
Makes sense.
But when you look at his batting average for the entire year combined, it suddenly looks like he was better against right-handed pitchers overall.
Which sounds impossible, right? But that happens because the raw number of times he faced each type of pitcher vastly changed between the two halves of the season.
Exactly. The overall average isn't just a simple blend of the two halves. It's warped by the hidden weight of how many pitches he faced in each scenario.
Right, the denominator matters. So how does that apply to human beings in Turkey? How do groups scoring 0.45, 0.37, and 0.38 mathematically combine to create a society-wide score of 0.52?
It comes down to the immense distance between these groups in society.
Yes. The old math basically failed to capture the sheer scale of the stratification. Think of it like, well, two islands.
Okay, two islands.
On one island, you have millions of families where the father has zero education, and on the other island, you have a very small group of highly educated families.
Right.
If you just look at the internal life on the uneducated island, siblings look somewhat similar to each other. They all share the same struggles. Their internal correlation is 0.37.
And on the highly educated island, those siblings also look somewhat similar to each other. They have a correlation of 0.38.
Right. But the ocean between those two islands is vast. The gap in resources, in opportunities, and in outcomes between an uneducated father's household and a university-educated father's household is so extreme.
So when you zoom out to look at the entire map.
That massive chasm completely dominates the equation. The harmonic mean proves mathematically that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, because parental education is creating literal parallel universes.
Wow. So the distance between the groups creates the massive inequality far more than any differences happening inside the groups. Parental education acts as this wedge splitting the country apart.
Exactly.
But, and this is where the paper takes a really unexpected turn, what happens when we use this new harmonic math to slice the exact same population by gender instead of by the father's education?
The findings here defy almost all established literature from Western developed nations. Slicing by gender reveals just a profound anomaly.
The educational sibling correlation for sister-sister pairs is 0.67,
Right.
but for brother-brother pairs, it is only 0.54. That is a massive gap of 0.13.
To give you a physical sense of those numbers, imagine sibling correlation as a rope tying two siblings together.
Okay, I can picture that.
For brothers, the rope exists, but it has some slack. A correlation of 0.54 means a brother's educational outcome is tied to his family, yes, but he still has room to move independently.
You can forge his own path a bit.
Right. But for sisters, a correlation of 0.67 means that rope is incredibly thick and pulled tight. Where one sister goes educationally, the other is almost certain to follow. Their destinies are basically locked together.
And they're locked to the family. To understand how wild a 0.13 gap is, we really need to look globally. That gap is roughly four times larger than the sister-brother gap seen in Denmark.
Wow.
Yeah. And in Germany, the trend goes in the exact opposite direction. Brothers actually have a higher correlation than sisters there. And in the US, there is virtually no gap at all. It's basically even.
The researchers also uncovered a firstborn effect in mixed-gender families that really reinforces this.
Oh, right, the firstborn data.
Yeah, so if the firstborn child is male, the sibling correlation for the household is 0.51. But if the firstborn is female, it drops to 0.44.
So what that data tells me is that for boys, going to school is the default setting of society. It's normative. But for girls, going to school is a conditional privilege that depends almost entirely on the specific family they were born into.
Exactly. A sister's educational destiny is far more tethered to her family's specific wealth, their beliefs, and their location than a brother's is. For a brother, society acts as an engine propelling him forward. For a sister, the family is the ultimate gatekeeper.
But calling the family the gatekeeper leads to a very common assumption. I think a lot of people hearing this right now would immediately say, well, obviously this gender gap is just a byproduct of poverty, right?
Oh, for sure. That's the instinct.
Like, it's families living in rural areas with uneducated parents who are forced to make brutal economic choices about which child gets to go to school, and they choose the boy.
It is a totally logical assumption to blame geography and poverty. But the researchers anticipated this, and they deployed something they call a dual-layer decomposition to test that exact theory.
Wait, dual layer? Are you saying they essentially took a mathematical microscope, zoomed in past the national level, and ran this harmonic formula inside specific isolated communities?
Yes, that is exactly what they did. They applied the math recursively. They isolated just the urban areas and checked the sister-brother gap there. Then they isolated just the rural areas and checked again.
Okay.
They ran the math inside large families and then inside highly educated
They
families.
checked every single slice of society.
They did. And the results are genuinely shocking. That 0.13 gap persists within every single observable partition.
Wait, everywhere.
Everywhere. Whether the family is rich or poor, whether they are living in a high-rise in Istanbul or a remote farming village, the gender gap is identical. They call this the within-sub-subset effect.
Within sub-subset effect.
Right. The math proves that the divergence between brothers and sisters is not driven by the observable traits we usually blame, like geography or household wealth.
So if it's not money and it's not location, what is building this invisible wall?
The researchers conclude it is driven by unobservable family and community-level factors. And they present four specific hypotheses for what these unobservable factors might actually be.
And each one tells such a deep story about human behavior. Let's go through them. The first is the elasticity of educational investment.
Right. Let's explore how that actually works in a home. It basically means a son's schooling is viewed as an inflexible necessity. Come hell or high water, the boy goes to school.
Right.
But a daughter's schooling is elastic. It stretches or shrinks based on how the parents feel or what resources happen to be left over. If times are good, she goes. If times are bad, she stays home. Her education is treated as a luxury.
Wow. Okay. And the second hypothesis involves marriage market considerations, right?
Yes. In many traditional settings, the timing of when a daughter leaves school is dictated by when the community expects her to marry.
Meaning if one sister reaches marrying age and is pulled out of school, the cultural norm might pull the younger sister out as well, regardless of her academic potential.
Exactly. Their educational ceiling is capped by the same shared expectation, which binds their outcomes tightly together. They both stop at the same point.
Which perfectly explains that thick rope tying sisters together.
Right.
Now, the third hypothesis is perhaps the most fascinating to me, intra-household bargaining. This suggests that a daughter's schooling is uniquely tied to the mother's power within the home.
Yes.
But why would the mother's power specifically protect the daughter, but not the son?
Because mothers often understand the specific vulnerabilities women face in their society. A mother who has some bargaining power, perhaps she brings in her own income or she's highly educated herself, she will use whatever leverage she has to advocate for her daughters to stay in school.
Because the boys don't need the advocacy.
Exactly. The mother might project her own unfulfilled educational desires onto her daughters, but if the father rules the household absolutely, the default boys first norm dominates. Brothers aren't subjected to this bargaining dynamic at all. Their path is clear regardless of who holds the power.
That makes so much sense. And the final hypothesis is unmeasured local community norms. Siblings share a neighborhood.
Yeah, the invisible pressures of a conservative versus a liberal community load heavily onto the girls.
Right, like the gossip of the village or the judgment of neighbors about a teenage girl walking to school.
Exactly. Those invisible forces dictate the boundaries for all the sisters in a family, making their outcomes highly similar to each other, but totally disconnected from their brothers.
And this brings us to why this specific mathematical methodology matters so much for the real world. The old additive variance math couldn't localize this problem at all. It blurred the lines.
It did. But this new harmonic math isolates the invisible cultural wall and sends a stark message to policymakers.
It tells them that the usual solutions just aren't going to work. Building more schools, giving families monthly cash stipends, or moving populations to urban centers won't automatically close the gender gap.
Because the gap isn't operating purely on economic margins. It is deeply rooted in unobservable cultural attitudes. If a government really wants to close this gap, they can't just change the physical infrastructure.
Right.
They have to target community norms, parental attitudes, and the bargaining power of women inside the home.
Which is so much harder to do. We started this deep dive looking at a highly technical, frankly intimidating paper about the harmonic mean decomposition of sibling correlations.
Yeah, a real mouthful.
But what we actually uncovered was a forensic blueprint of how society stratifies itself.
By fixing the math, the researchers prove that parental education pulls groups so far apart that it creates a mathematical paradox.
The Simpsons paradox.
Right, and they revealed a cultural wall that uniquely restricts women's mobility, regardless of their background or wealth.
It's incredibly powerful stuff. So, to you listening to this right now, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. Think about your own siblings, if you have them. Or think about the kids you grew up with in your neighborhood, the ones whose kitchens you sat in after school.
That shared environment.
Exactly. When you look at where your lives ended up today, whether you were wildly divergent in your success or remarkably similar, How much of that journey do you truly believe was driven by your own pure individual free will? And how much of it was just the invisible harmonic weight of the kitchen environment you shared?